You're listening to All Marine Radio, broadcasting from Costa Mesa, California, on the All Warrior Radio Network. Thursday morning to you. Hope your self-quarantining is going all right. Mine is. Me and Colleen hanging out. That's right. Work, my workout buddy now. 3 days in a row. No, 2 days in a row. Which is 2 days more than we've ever worked out together. So, yeah. And she knows what's scheduled for today, too. So that's good. Breaking news just now. Tulsi Gabbard drops out of the Democratic presidential primary. Why she was still hanging around, I'm not exactly sure. But she was. So that's news. Also breaking news. The palace says Prince Albert of Monaco has tested positive for coronavirus.
What?
Anyway, so yeah, that breaking news right now. So you got that going for you this morning. Anyway, good morning to you on a Thursday, the 19th day of March. The year is 2020. And the world dealing with the coronavirus. So we got that going for us today. I found it interesting yesterday as I watched the news through the day that there's this if you follow this whole Chinese virus thing, all of a sudden the president, for some reason, and I know why he did it, right? And he's certainly well within his rights to do what he did, and it's entirely fitting that he did what he did. But in order to, in my opinion, to understand it, you have to go to what the Chinese State Department did, right? That guy, I can't remember who the, what the guy's name was, but what was it, a week ago? So it was the Chinese foreign. I'm trying to spell foreign. About the U.S. Army. And the coronavirus. And telling the United States that they needed that the United States military needed to come clean with the rest of the world. All right, so let me find a credible. Here's Bloomberg. All right, this is now. I said it was about a week ago, so it was 7 days ago, according to Bloomberg. Headline: Chinese official. Now, notice that you didn't see the American media react to this, right? No reaction to this, right? Chinese official pushes conspiracy theory: U.S. spread virus. Now, this is Bloomberg, right? So not some goofball blog or whatever. A Chinese foreign ministry official pushed a conspiracy theory that the U.S. Army may have had a role in spreading the virus, highlighting growing tensions between the world's biggest economies as both governments seek to deflect blame for the outbreak. Quote, it might be U.S. Army who brought the epidemic to Wuhan, Zhao Lijian, a foreign ministry spokesman said in a tweet. So this is a spokesman for the Chinese foreign ministry. Now, just so you know, right, they don't like go off and do their own thing. That's not something that happens. So if this guy's tweeting it, it's because it's part of an organized effort by the Chinese to, right, to deflect blame for what they've inflicted on the world. Okay. So the tweet goes on, be transparent, exclamation mark. Make public your data, exclamation mark. U.S. owe us an explanation. He later followed up with another tweet urging his 284,000 followers to share an article arguing that the virus originated in the U.S. It was posted on a website promoting conspiracy theories, including articles lambasting vaccine deep state and questioning whether Osama bin Laden ever existed. On Friday, in Beijing, Zheng Shuang, another spokesman for the foreign ministry, said that international society, including the United States, has different opinions about the source of the virus, but China always believes that it is a matter of science which requires professional and scientific assessment. Zheng was asked twice if earlier tweets by his colleague, Zhao, represented the view of the Chinese government. Quote, I think you may want to ask certain senior U.S. officials, did they speak on behalf of the U.S. government when they attacked and smeared China recently, he said, in response to one question. What I said represents the Chinese government attitude, he said, in response to the other. So that's what the president's responding to. Okay, that's what the president's responding to. So people are like, oh, the president's being racist. Well, nobody said that the Chinese were being racist. And that's what, I mean, look, Donald Trump's not a perfect president, okay? Far from it. But to me, if you don't tell the whole story, you mislead the American people. Now, so the president starts referring to it as the Chinese virus. Or the Wuhan virus, right? And everybody's like, oh, he's being racist. And it's like, you got part of the story, man. So let me just tell you, the truth is the truth, and as the Chinese won't own it. Now, here's what's interesting. Now, the Chinese are now on a charm offensive around the world. Okay? So they turned this thing loose. They knew, evidently, the articles I said, the Chinese knew that this thing was going to be a problem. And because of the way they are as a government, as a totalitarian government, what do you think they did? Nothing. Do you think they warned the world? Do you think they called the CDC and said, hey, we're going to need help because this thing, by our accounts, is going to get bad very quickly? Let me give you the answer to that. No, they didn't do that. So any chance to react quickly was lost. And then it's disseminated around the world for, what, a couple months. But are the Chinese going to take responsibility for that? Not only no, but hell no. So, article. So let me read you. This is in The Guardian. I think that comes out of the UK. China sends doctors and masks overseas as domestic coronavirus infection drops. Now, first of all, do I believe that infections in China today, they said there's zero. Do you believe that? In a nation of 130 some on 1.3 billion people, do you believe that they had zero? If you do, I have some swampland in Iowa that I want to sell you. Anyway, in the past few weeks, China has donated coronavirus testing kits to Cambodia, sent plane loads of ventilators, masks, and medics to Italy and France, pledged to help the Philippines, Spain, and other countries, and deployed medics to Iran and Iraq. Chinese President Xi Jinping has offered comforting words, telling the Spanish Prime Minister Pedro Sanchez that sunshine comes after the storm, and adding that the two countries should step up cooperation and exchanges after the outbreak. As the coronavirus outbreak spreads and countries struggle to respond, China has positioned itself as a leader and a benefactor in public health, building the kind of soft power Beijing needs at a time of intensifying U.S.-China rivalry and scrutiny of Chinese influence around the world. The coronavirus first emerged in central China in the city of Wuhan in December and threw the country into a state of emergency as more than 80,000 people were infected and more than 3,000 died. Public anger and criticism over the government's initial suppression of information and slow response enabled the virus to spread, posed one of the most serious threats to Chinese leadership in decades. But as the number of new infections has dropped dramatically after stringent quarantine measures and social distancing by the public, China's messaging has shifted. In recent weeks, Beijing has claimed almost victory over the virus, and state media has held China's support for other countries facing the outbreak. Quote, "We now see Chinese officials and state media claiming that China bought the world time to prepare for this pandemic," said Natasha Kassam, a research fellow at the Lowry Institute in Sydney and a former Australian diplomat. Quote, "We know the propaganda machine within China is able to rewrite history, but now we're seeing that replicated overseas. China's victory over COVID-19 has already been written, and authorities are trying very hard for that message to be received overseas." Here's another quote from a guy named Noah Barkin, who's a senior fellow at the German Marshall Fund. "There is nothing wrong with China helping European and other countries, especially now that it has gained the upper hand in containing the coronavirus at home. But it is also clear that Beijing sees its aid as a propaganda tool." So anyway, so now I want you to listen. This was last night. This is Martha McCallum. We like Martha because her grandfather or great uncle fought on Iwo Jima. I haven't read the book yet, so forgive me. But this is her last night with a guy who wrote a piece, and his name, give me one second, is Michael Auslan. Right? And he wrote a piece yesterday in Real Clear Politics entitled "Beijing Fears COVID-19 is Turning Point for China and Globalization," and not in a good way. Right? So this is last night, her interview with Michael Auslan. But again, I think Martha, whoever produced this segment, didn't give Martha the right background, because she's talking about, you know, the president and being called a racist and not being able to frame the whole argument as the president is responding to Chinese attempts to booger flick this thing onto the United States. Right? And this, the guy was a spokesman for the Chinese Foreign Ministry. So listen to this.
So as promised, Michael Auslan is a fellow at the Hoover Institution and the author of Asia's...
Now, the Hoover Institution, if you'll recall, a year, maybe a year and a half ago. These guys and women put out, I want to say, maybe a couple hundred page paper about how China, that the United States needs to wake up to how China is attempting to influence information in the United States, how they've infiltrated the media, how they've infiltrated higher education, and that they do this with their money, and then they pull the strings. Okay, so that was the Hoover Institute, and it comes out of Stanford University.
New geopolitics, very interesting piece that you wrote today.
General Mattis, I think, does work with the Hoover Institute, just to round out the information flow.
Sir, thank you so much for being here. So before I get to sort of the bigger point of what you write about, you also write about President Xi and the fact that during the whole beginning of this pandemic or epidemic at the time, I guess, in China, he was holed up in the Forbidden City. And then at one point he made the decision, you know, after he felt it was safe enough to sort of venture down to Wuhan. Tell me about that and the threat to his reputation in China and around the world.
Hey, Martha. Well, you know, Xi Jinping, the general secretary of the Communist Party, who's become the most powerful Chinese leader since Mao Zedong, has rested his entire reputation on being a technocratic master. You know, he's the one who is going to bring China to the China dream that by 2049 or earlier, it's going to be a state that has the middle class aspirations of every other country. And so this really threatens not only his reputation, but the reputation of the Communist Party. And what you saw is that for the first few weeks, he was missing in action. He wasn't anywhere. And he was sending out his subordinates to take the flak and to hold the meetings. And it was clear that they didn't know what to do about this crisis. So finally, when they've argued to the world that they've turned the corner and now they control the crisis, then he appeared and now is trying to take all the credit for it.
So you also say that you have a lot of concerns about what we're still hearing from them, that there are aerial photos that show very long lines at hospitals still. What do you make of that?
Well, the problem is you can't trust any of the information coming out of China. First of all, this is a party state, a Leninist party state that knew about this virus, this Wuhan flu, back in at least December, probably November. They didn't tell the world. They didn't tell their own people. They didn't bring in the CDC or other countries with medical capabilities that could have helped control
this.
And
they offered, by the way.
We offered multiple times once we understood what was going on. So you can't trust anything that they're telling us. Unfortunately, that's not the China that we wanted to deal with, but it's a China that we have. Look, people have been doubting for years what they say about their economic growth, of course, what they say about their healthcare levels and the like. And this type of crisis that harks back to what happened in 2003 with SARS, this new Wuhan flu, is something that will eat away very quickly at the credibility of the party. So what did they do, Martha? Did they try to control the crisis? Well, of course, to some degree. But what they did is they clamped down on social media. They threatened doctors like Dr. Li Wenjiang, who died, from telling the world about what was going on. What they cared about was their own survival and not the survival of the people either in China or. Around the world.
So what do you make of the fact there's been a lot of discussion? I pointed out in the White House press room pushback when the president calls it the China virus or China coronavirus. What do you make of that? Is it incorrect? And B, is he, in some way sort of jabbing at what he sees as a vulnerable leadership right now over this issue in China?
No, I think it's actually quite important because what China is doing is waging a propaganda war. It is trying to tell the world how to think about this virus. It's trying to tell the world that it has beaten the virus and that we should all be celebrating China's governance model. Look, we've all heard and we've probably had Lyme disease. We've heard about Ebola. We all still talk about the Spanish flu from 100 years ago. This is the Wuhan flu. This is the Wuhan virus. Okay, it is not racist. It is not anti-Chinese to call it by the place where it first was discovered or where it first emerged. We do that all the time. Why does China get a pass? And by the way, I think we should all, maybe the president should make a deal with China. When the Chinese themselves and the Chinese government stops talking about African swine fever, then we'll stop talking about Wuhan flu. It's a double standard. And what China is trying to do is rewrite history. And we shouldn't stand for it, because what it is doing is making us more vulnerable to problems that will come out of China again in the future.
Very eye-opening. Michael Auslan, it's a great piece today. Beijing fears COVID-19 is a turning point for China and globalization. I suggest everybody read it. Thank you, Michael. Good.
So that's just the truth, right? That is simply the God's honest. But because we're playing Emperor's New Clothes, right? That's not part of the agenda. And so it'll be interesting to see if China is able to pull this off. And you sit here and you watch it and you think, wow, right? So you do all that. But again, just know this. It's part of the larger extortion game. Everybody knows it. That if you want to resist our narrative, you're going to pay for it. Your economy is going to pay for it. And it's the world that Vietnam lives in. It's the world that the Philippines live in. And it's just down is up. Why? Because they say it is. For no other reason. That's why down is up. So pretty interesting stuff. But again, what I find stunning on a regular basis is that you have members of the media who don't paint, you know, the whole picture. The president, you know, started this after the Chinese foreign ministry started saying that American soldiers brought this virus to Wuhan in October. Right? And so again, and so now, you know, the president's a racist and all the rest is nonsense. So to me, but again, themes that you've heard Grant Newsham talk about, you know, the world bending to China's will. And that the next question is, and it's been brought up by senators on both sides of the aisle. I've seen senators talk about it more than I've seen anybody else. But does America need to rethink, right? And does America need to incentivize domestic production of certain industries and say, no, we believe that this industry is key, and therefore we have to a certain extent either give it tax breaks or do other things to ensure ensure this industry's profitability, and we want it to stay in the United States. So it'll be interesting if on the backside, and again, you know, there's going to be hearings about this. You know, how did it happen? There's going to be hearings in terms of why the public health sector, you know, didn't respond as quickly as it should have. So, and again, I'm going to have a guy who used to be the director of public health where I was elected. His name's Don Shields. He's retired now. He's a veteran, retired from the Air Force, and then went into the public health business. I think he was already part of the public health business in the Air Force, but got out and was a director of public health for Grand Forks, where I got elected to the city council. So Don's been traveling the world. He got home recently and got my message and said, hey, Mac, I'd love to come on. And so really what he'll do is what you see a lot of people do is explain stuff. And so you'll hear him next week. So I'm excited about that. But again, this narrative, right, the battle for the narrative. And, you know, at some point, does the Western world act in solidarity and say, you know, China, you need to stay like about here? Or do we continue to go down the road that we and play the Emperor's New Clothes? So, but again, I when you watch those media events and you see nobody saying, you know, Mr. President, let me ask you a question. Is this in response to Chinese allegations that the United States Army brought this virus? And you know what the president would say? It is absolutely in response to that. Okay? It is absolutely. We didn't start, you know, as a president of the United States, I didn't start this. And what I saw him say the other day was, look, everybody knows where it came from. And I'm not having that. And I thought, good for you. Because again, the truth does matter. But it's just amazing to me how people in our media that are, if you're in that room, you're at the highest levels of the media, and they're not watching, they don't watch the news for these kind of stories. That story was written about, that's Bloomberg writing about it. It's not like it escapes their view. So then the question is, are you willfully ignoring it? Are you willfully ignoring it? That article you can find by Michael Auslan is in Real Clear Politics. The headline is, I'll put the link. I'll do it right now because otherwise I forget. I got taken to task for that by somebody here relatively recently. I'll put the link in. I just did. It's in Real Clear Politics. Beijing fears COVID-19 is turning point for China and globalization. You'll see it. You can also listen to it. I don't know who the reader is, but I'll play a segment. It's really, whoever reads it sucks. Listen to this.
5% back. Say what now?
5% back.
Oh, that's the commercial. That's awesome. Capital One Walmart Rewards Card. Okay, hold on. The Capital One Walmart Rewards Card. So this will resume here, and you'll hear the monotone.
The White House didn't dissolve its pandemic response office. President Trump gets his share of criticism, some warranted.
Right, so kind of monotone-ish, so it sucks. So, but that's in case you want to listen to it, but the whole article's there. And let me get to the last. I'll get to his final couple paragraphs. To begin with, Washington must mandate that some significant percentage of major drugs, everyday medicines, first aid material, such as masks and gowns, and higher-end medical equipment like ventilators, will be produced domestically so that we are better prepared for the next pandemic. In addition, controlling our own supply of vital medicines and equipment will allow Washington to continue to be able to assist other countries during similar emergencies, something we are not able to do with coronavirus and which Beijing is stepping in to take advantage of. Yeah, and that, to me, that's one of the things that jumped out at me. Now, Beijing, because they produce all this stuff, they can source it and they can go around the world to help people. That's not a position the United States needs to be in. Okay, second, America's broader economic dependence on China needs to be reduced. Materials such as rare earths, 80% which come from China, should be produced at home when possible. While the U.S. military needs to limit its exposure to Chinese goods for everything from transistors to tire rubber. Thirdly, Washington must ensure that China does not capture the global semiconductor chip-making industry, which is a priority for Beijing. To surrender the crown jewel of the digital economy would put America in a position of permanent dependence vis-a-vis China. The coronavirus pandemic is a turning point for China and the world. Today, Washington and other global capitals are solely responsible for the success or failure of their own efforts to control the Wuhan virus. In the short term, however, they should not let Mr. Xi and China get away with rewriting the history of the epidemic. In the longer term, they must look to reform globalization by prudently reshaping their economies and societies in the shadow of future crises. Michael Auslan is a fellow at the Hoover Institution, Stanford University, and the author of Asia's New Geopolitics. So, yeah, I'd recommend that to you. All right. United States Marine Corps Band makes this morning official. So, good morning to everybody out there. man, this is dedicated to all your parents out there. Do something, you know, new and spend your time now with your kids and create memories that will last a lifetime. You know, again, under the guise of Josephine McNamara, my grandmother, and when God closes a door, he opens a window. So look for the window. And, you know, and you have the opportunity, whether it's simply working out, having dinner every night, sitting down to and reading with, watching movies with, whatever you do together, you're going to have a chance to make some memories. If you don't, if you're not in that boat, right, then, you know, make some resolutions and on the back end of this, come out of it as a better person. So this is dedicated to that thought.
Betraying your whole life if you don't say what you think and you don't say it honestly and bluntly.
Once you're out of the core, you know, it's your responsibility to live your life in a way that would honor those that were with you and died. I mean, don't waste your life. Goodness, do something meaningful and don't be going out there saying, look, oh, woe is me. I'm a poor veteran, or I'm a disabled veteran. Well, yeah, I am a disabled veteran. But, you know, we can't have that kind of attitude. We've got to show people that, hey, we care about our country. We care about what happens to everyone. Marine Corps changed me. It made me a better man, but I don't know a Marine that wouldn't tell you the same thing, Mike.
We just have to execute. And we are executing every day, and Sergeant Major and I are very proud of what you do. Doesn't mean we can't get better. We don't want to make a mistake to learn. We don't want to lose to learn. We cannot lose if we have to go fight. We got to do what these Marines did here 75 years ago. Persevere against difficult, challenging conditions and odds and win. You got to win.
Time for us to check the weather here on a Thursday. Yeah, it's been cool in Southern California. Afternoons have been nice. Here's what the weather looks like. Currently, warmer on the East Coast. Partly sunny and 61 in the nation's capital in Northern Virginia, which means Quantico. Warmer in North Carolina, partly sunny in 76. In 29 Palms, it's a little bit cooler, sunny in 48. At Camp Pendleton, clouds in 49. Camp Smith in Hawaii, dark, cloudy, and 67. Okinawa, raining, dark, and 63. In Afghanistan, it's warmer there, partly cloudy, dark, and 74 as the sun sets there. And in Iraq, it's cooled off a little bit. It is partly cloudy and 65. At the home of All Marine Radio, mostly cloudy and 55. Looking for a high of only 60 degrees today with a 50% chance of rain, which means it's probably not going to rain here. 50% chance of rain in North Dakota says it's raining. 50% chance of California says it's probably not. I don't know why. It's just crazy. For tonight, it is going to be raining and a low overnight of 52. Tomorrow, 64 and partly sunny. Saturday, 66 and partly sunny. So that is a look at your weather here on a Thursday. We'll take a break. We'll come back. We'll check more news headlines as we get moving here on Thursday. The Lynch and Kenny event is going to happen, and I will go ahead and tee up for them the coronavirus, our restraint in Iraq relative to rocket attack. And then I got a letter that I've talked about this week saying that John Bradley acted poorly by not coming forward and saying that he was not part of the Iwo Jima flag raising. And the email kind of takes him to task. I've never looked at Bradley. I look at Gagnon and Bradley very differently now. Now that Gagnon wasn't in the picture. Gagnon is the one that identified everybody in the picture. Interestingly enough, there is no picture of Gagnon on Iwo Jima. Yeah. Now, reading through the Marine Corps put out this incredible document, and I'll talk about it with Jeff and Tim, but the title of it, it's 400 pages. It's called Investigating Iwo, the flag raisings, plural, in myth, memory, and esprit de corps. And done by the Marine Corps Historical Division. And this was talked about, I think Mary Reinwald talked about it. If she didn't, Chris Woodbridge, I'm sure, talked about it. And so each one of those, I mean, there's like 13 chapters in it, and they're done by PhDs from Marine Corps University. I mean, it's amazing. And they cover different aspects of both flag raisings and everything that went on around it, from the war bond drive to trying to get to the truth in the two Hewley boards. And the third board was called the Bowers board, named after the generals who chaired them. And they're amazing. And you'll see pictures in there that you haven't seen. And they explain everything about both flag raising. So it's very, very cool. So we'll talk about that as well. Email. All right. That's a new one. Booger flick. Yeah, are you kidding me? That's I'm not accepting that. Right? That's like that was booger flicking was a term that I first heard, I think, in Iraq. I don't know if I heard it before that. But it had to do with dodging responsibility. Oh yeah, they're booger flicking that on so and so. What? Yeah. That means they're ducking responsibility for that. And then I remember hearing somebody say in a meeting, oh, yeah, booger flicking. It's an Olympic-level sport in the 1st Marine Division, man, because nobody wants to be wearing it when chaos comes rolling around. So, yeah, you better get good at it. And then some people just laugh and roll their eyes. But, yeah, booger flicker. That's the person. And booger flick, that's the verb. All right, that means dodging responsibility. So anyway, and that's what China's trying to do. China's booger flicking on us. And the president, like all people of any form of substance, he's not having it when it's not true. But, you know, there's certain people on the planet that love to play the emperor's new clothes. Love to play the emperor's new clothes. So, all right, we'll take a break. We'll come back. More of All Marine Radio coming up next right here on your home for it, the All Warrior Radio Network.
America's injured and critically ill service members face incredible challenges every day of their lives. Since 2004, the Semper Fi Fund has helped thousands of service members and their families with both immediate and long-term needs. Join the Semper Fi Fund in supporting American heroes. They've given so much. Now it's our turn. Learn how your tax-deductible donation makes a real difference in their lives at SemperFiFund.org.
All you veterans, listen up. This is Bob Nielsen, former Marine and founder of the 100 Entrepreneurs Project. Turner Construction is looking for veterans with real-world leadership experience to join their team of professionals.
Hold on, Nielsen. Are we talking about a job or a career?
Matt, Turner Construction is a great company with global opportunities for veteran leaders who are looking to start professional careers. I know. I returned to Turner after I got back from Vietnam and retired after 50 years. I had a great career traveling the world leading teams of Turner employees as we built incredible projects.
Are they looking for me to have construction experience, Bob?
Absolutely not. Turner is looking for leaders who have led under pressure. We want leadership. So if you're led in Iraq or Afghanistan or any other contingency, Turner Construction is actively looking for you.
So, a career with competitive pay, good benefits, and a company seeking veteran leaders. That's what we're talking about.
Bingo. We're on the right road when a grunt can understand it. Good job, Mac.
I appreciate that there, Nielsen. How do I get the ball rolling? What do I do?
Just email your resume to jobs at allmarineradio.com, and I will personally contact you and we'll begin the process.
I love it. Turner Construction is looking for veteran leaders who are looking for careers to join their veteran-friendly team. Email Bob Nielsen at jobs@allmarineradio.com. Let's do it.
We all have the ability to touch the lives of those around us. Moms, dads, neighbors, teachers, friends. These are the people who are always there to listen when we need to talk. Though their actions may not always be monumental, they are always felt. To someone going through a difficult time, a text, a call, or a visit can mean so much. Reach out to the veterans in your life today. Let them know they're not alone. One simple act can make all the difference. That's the power of one. If you're a veteran in crisis or know one who is, visit VeteransCrisisLine.net for free 24/7 confidential support. Or call 1-800-273-8255 and press 1.
I'm good, but I have a story and I don't know where to start.
I'm good, but I feel alone in the crowd.
I'm good, but the past keeps coming back.
When the service member or veteran in your life says,
I'm good.
Are you really listening?
I'm good, but I can't get out of bed.
I'm good, but I can't sleep.
I'm good, but I feel overwhelmed.
I'm good, but I don't feel safe.
I'm good, but I still have nightmares.
I'm good, but I don't need any help.
I'm good, but I don't feel anything anymore.
I'm good, but I can't live like this anymore.
I'm really not so good. Are you ready to listen?
Suicide prevention is everyone's responsibility. Listen to the veteran or service member in your life. If you are in crisis or know someone who is, call the Veterans Crisis Line and Military Crisis Line at 1-800-273-8255 and press 1 for free 24/7 confidential support.
Hi, I'm Colleen McNamara, and you're listening to My Dad on All Marine Radio on the All Warrior Radio Network.
Slowing it down for all you couples out there. Francis Albert Sinatra, also known as the chairman of the board. The summer wind. Singing Summer Wind.
Came blowing in.
from across the sea. It lingered there to touch your hair and walk with me. All summer long we sang a song, and then we strolled that golden sand. Two sweethearts and the summer wind.
All right, now that everybody's relaxed, all right. Yeah, you know what? One of my favorite songs he sings.
Those days and nights, they went flying by.
The Chairman.
The world was new beneath a blue umbrella sky. Then softer than a piper man, one day it called to you.
All right, so we'll check news headlines. The president's on TV right now. Let's see what he's doing. He's making the anti-malaria drug available nearly immediately. So I didn't catch the preamble to that. Does that mean that it has an impact on coronavirus? I would assume, but. I don't know. I got to rewind the news. Anyway. Good morning, Mac. Hey, Bradley, exclamation mark. I believe gets a pass. Bradley got caught up in the shit show and probably just said, fuck it, I'm moving on. Hell, think about it. No social media, just newspapers and gatherings, which were few and far between, to condemn Bradley for something he just went along with and wanted to just get on with his life. Is too critical in my book. Gagnon is different, but gets my sympathy. Gagnon was described as a simpleton or even special, but Gagnon went with it, implicated others, and it didn't end well. Both cases were sad. Big Dave and Vacaville. You know what? I agree. I judge him a little bit differently because Gagnon, again, so one of the things you read when you read that investigating Iwo document is they tried to, as they were refining, you know, as Gagnon's identity in the picture came into question, they were looking for other pictures. So, because as the FBI forensics lab helped out, they were saying, okay, this is how we can identify these guys. Every one of them wore their helmet cover a little bit different on their helmet. And the helmet is prominent. Like when we can't see their face, we can see their helmet. And the camouflage pattern and how they each one of them folded it differently under the helmet, right, is as revealing as a fingerprint, you know. And so what we did was we took everybody's helmet and we digitized it and we used it. And you're like, holy shit. And so they went looking for a picture of Gagnon. There's no picture of Gagnon on Iwo Jima. Yeah. And so they couldn't identify him. And so initially his son was cooperating, and then his son stopped returning phone call. Yeah. I mean, you just feel bad for that kid, right? I mean, kid, he's in his 70s now. His whole life, you know, he's, you know, gone and given speeches, he's appeared at this thing, and you know, the last interview I saw with him is very sad. In saying, you know, and now I've learned that my father wasn't a part of it. And so I agree. I judge them differently. Gagnon was a runner and, you know, he got asked, who's in this picture? Now, Gagnon knew that some of the guys in that picture were dead. And he puts himself in that picture. So to me, Bradley... And I think that if you look on page, I think it's 212 and 213 of the report. And again, that it's different from page 212 and 213 are different from the numbers in the document, right? Because the numbers in the document correspond to pages. The numbers in the report have to account for there's a cover, there's a foreword, there's an index, there's at the end there's end notes and all that kind of stuff. So page numbers in the document are different from page numbers in the publication. Okay, so it's 212 on the publication. And I'll tell you what, Mary Reinwald, Colonel type, writes this. And I think it's very, you know, and I'll read this to you because it's a few paragraphs long. But I think it's eminently fair to Bradley. So at the bottom on the left-hand side, it's two columns. So on the left-hand column of page 212, it starts. What about Bradley? Question mark. He had to know at some point that a mistake had been made. Why did he not say something? Especially after the Duvalier board reported the first mistake in flag raisers. He confirmed Hayes' assertion that it was Block vice Hansen in Rosenthal's famous photograph. So why did he not take the same opportunity to admit that he was not the second flag raiser? While no one can know for sure, two important points must be considered in any speculation about what Bradley did or what his possible motivations were. First and foremost, Bradley was a true hero, and his heroism had nothing to do with the flag raising. On February 21st, 1945, D+2, he saved a wounded Marine at great personal risk to himself. In addition, Bradley was later wounded in action, left the island on 12 March after being hit with shrapnel in both legs. It is entirely plausible, given his wounded status, that he was initially confused about which flag raising he partook, in which he partook. Or maybe he, like Hayes, was pressured by public information officers before the war bond tour to simply go along with the program. After all, he did raise a flag on Iwo Jima. He may have thought that the mistake was not that noteworthy, and he would simply participate in the war bond tour, and that would be the end of it, right? That's his duty. So he goes home, he gets told, you know, hey, you're in this, right, Doc? Well, I'm not. Doc, you're in this, right? Your name's out. Everybody knows it. Two Marines have said you're in it, so you're in it, right? And Bradley's like, fuck it, I'll help. Mary Reinwald goes on, and I think this is important. He had no way of knowing in the summer of 1945 that the flag raising would become such a significant part of Marine Corps history. Bradley's actions after the war support all of these possibilities. According to his son, James Bradley, his father refused all interviews and instructed his family to tell reporters when they called that he was fishing. He had no desire to discuss the flag raising or even the battle. Was this out of a sense of guilt or shame? Or was it a desire to downplay what may have started as a misunderstanding but spun out of control? Question mark. One can only speculate as to Bradley's motivations, but given the manner in which he led his life both before and after February 23rd, 1945, he deserves the benefit of the doubt. And that, to me, is that's why Mary Reinwald, I mean, to me, she deserves an award for that, that series of paragraphs. I think that's absolutely important, absolutely positively important. The long arc of John Bradley's life, right? He's an honorable man. And what the circumstances were, and I think she does a pretty good job of laying it out. She does a pretty good job in laying it out. So, again, I'll tell you, it's great reading. I mean, it's incredibly well written, incredibly meticulously footnoted, and so amazing stuff. All right, headlines. Military halts Afghanistan deployments, will extend some troops there amid coronavirus concerns. U.S.-led coalition in Iraq pauses training over coronavirus concerns. And a story we talked about yesterday, the DOD schools in Japan had remained open. They announced today that the schools in Japan have closed as two students await coronavirus test. Not that they're positive, they're awaiting test. So Anyway, Air Force is second service to suspend fitness testing because of coronavirus. And there's a picture of airmen doing sit-ups in close proximity to each other and yada, yada, yada. The Army Reserve is going to halt monthly training amid coronavirus worries. Navy allows commanders to relax hair grooming standards to help stop coronavirus spread. Commissaries restrict access to authorized customers only. And they've ended early bird shopping. All right, so that's in the Stars and Stripes. Let me see if there's anything interesting in USNI news. Nothing. Marine Corps Times headlines today. Thousands of Marines are in Arizona for exercise despite DOD travel ban. Let me tell you, the safest place to be is in 29 Palms out training in the desert and also, you know, Arizona training in the desert. So I'm not exactly sure if you were headed in that direction, why we would say no. All right. Why we would say no. Yeah, get them out there. The top five stories in Early Bird, and then we'll take a quick break, and then we'll get Jeff and Tim on here today. Number one, Congressional Chairman hope COVID-19 won't derail defense policy bill. We talked about that yesterday. Number two, the military is sending breathing masks, ventilators to civilian hospitals. Secretary of Defense talked about that. Three more sailors aboard warships have coronavirus. So this wasn't updated. You know, I saw an email that said a lot of staffers at Military Times were being furloughed. Yeah. Now, why would that be? Advertising rates down? I mean, I'm sure people are reading. I mean, they have more time to do it. So I find that a little bit curious. So that's a look at your news this morning. We'll take a break when we come back. Jeff Kenny, Tim Lynch will join us. We'll get their thoughts on coronavirus. Timmy wrote a piece that I'll include in the post at Free Range International. I think he posted it. And then I'll get their thoughts on the United States restraint in Iraq. Do they believe it's linked to an assessment in about the Iranian nation? We'll talk about the Iwo Jima thing. I'll get their thoughts on what they think about. You know, it's pretty hard to judge those guys who have been, you know, always held up as heroes. But I look at them like Dave and Vacaville said. I look at them all sympathetically. I mean, come on, man. They fought through that battle, which was one of the most, you know, brutal battles in Marine Corps history. But I do see Gagnon as a little bit of an opportunist. And the things you read about him, you know, he was the only one that attempted to, you know, he called people that gave him business cards and probably did what a lot of us would have done, which is, hey, I met you in Philadelphia. You gave me your card. I'm looking for a job. Call so-and-so. And ultimately he becomes a handyman, I think, in for a school district. So I look at them different, and I think Mary Reinwald is right on the money relative to Bradley. God only knows what the exact permutation was, but if you look at the long arc of John Bradley, both before February 23rd and after February 23rd, he covers himself with selflessness, and honor throughout his life. And so to me, whatever his reasons were, and I believe, you know, he got told to shut up and color. And as Mary Reinwald says, you know, she says that, I mean, who knew that the Marine Corps would build a monument, right? Other than that, it's a war bond drive thing, and then I go home, and I never hear about it again. And then can you imagine how his heart sinks when it's like, oh, no, they're going to turn it into the Marine Corps War Memorial in Washington, D.C.? Like, oh, my God, I've got to continue to relive this thing. So anyway, all right, we'll take a break. More of All Marine Radio coming up next, the Lynch-Kenny event. So don't touch that dial.